And welcome back to Night Cheese. Thank you for joining us this week for episode 47, The Love Child of Encyclopedia Brown and Carmen Sandiego. As always, I'm Steven.
And I'm Tim.
And we'd like to thank you for coming back and welcoming us back, I guess, really, because we've been on hiatus for a little while. And our last episode was our Guilty Pleasures episode, where we talked about movies we were embarrassed to admit that we like, and also films that we just, and then just films and shows that we just don't care for at all. So that was a lot of fun, and we actually had a little bit of feedback as well from our Facebook friends and close personal friends as well.
Yeah,
some of us even our spouses. So.
Yeah, no, I was very excited about this episode. A lot of friends. Not a lot, but a few friends in person came and told me that they liked. But then we also, we did get some Facebook feedback, which was exciting because this is a topic that's really fun to me. And, you know, you could tell me we had a lot of fun with the episode with stuff, you know, whether it be stuff we hate, you know, movies that just were horrible or stuff that we like, but we're kind of, you know, we don't want to tell anybody. So that was fun to get some feedback on that and hear what other people, maybe some other guilty pleasures. And so that was very exciting. Should we mention? I guess we can go ahead and mention them.
My lovely wife has now been co-opted by one of Tim's guilty pleasure picks. I guess that's one way of saying it. She's developed a, I would say, an unhealthy fascination, but she really does have it under control. She's not out of control or anything. But she is now also enjoying the Vampire Diaries on CW. Without me, I might add. I'm not jumping on that wagon anytime soon. But in all fairness, I haven't tried to watch it either. So, but I know that she really enjoys it, and she can see why you listed it. So you have a little bit of validation in that department too. Yeah. So.
I told her, and I will tell anybody who gets sucked into that, thanks to me, both at the same time, you're welcome, and I'm so, so sorry. So I'm a pretty... It kind of cracked me up that she ended up getting into it. So, yeah. Anyways, we also got a another comment from Steve Skirvin, who we're so excited. When he first, I guess, maybe a month or two ago, liked us, we got really excited because we both didn't know him personally. And but then he commented, and when he commented about liking our show, we didn't know exactly at what point he was listening, like if he was listening from the beginning and if he would stick around at all, you know. So we were a little nervous. We're like, oh man, when's he gonna drop out? But no, he commented about our guilty pleasures, and he said, hey guys, I enjoyed the last podcast. I took it in while mowing the yard. Good call. I do that too. Anytime I can pull out while I'm doing work, I will pull out my headphones and listen to podcasts. He said two old movies came to mind that could be put in my guilty pleasure file. The original Clash of the Titans and Beastmaster, both are 1980s fantasy / sword and sorcery genre. And take care. So thank you so much for commenting, Steven. I think Steven and I both agree that, man, the Clash of the Titans.
What? Such a good call. Clash of the Titans. I could not thumbs up that enough. Definitely perfect guilty pleasure.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. And it's funny, and you know, I mentioned in one of the podcasts we were talking about, you know, just really, you know, some of our favorite movies. And I know in our list, you know, among our list was Jurassic Park. And I kind of mentioned that how that really changed things for me as far as the way I saw movies and what movies could do for me. And although I still hold to that, I really feel like as a kid, the Clash of the Titans, I remember being just completely in awe of seeing what could be done on film that I'd never seen before and I didn't think could be done. And so I remember it definitely had a big effect on me as well. I remember I just loved that movie, and so that was a great pick. Steven and either of us have seen Beastmaster, but we'll definitely look around for it. But yeah, thanks for those two recommendations, and Clash of the Titans, that was a great pick.
One more thing about Clash of the Titans too. It's funny that he brings that one up because not only can the early 1980s Clash of the Titans be considered a guilty pleasure, but the remake most definitely can be on the crap list.
Except for Release the Kraken, Liam Neeson, his. No, I'm just joking.
yeah. So much so that they made a spiced rum commercial out of it. Okay. Release the Kraken. Anyway, so that would have made Taken 2 better. Anyway, so never mind. Sorry, other conversation we had before recording. But yeah, the remake of Clash of the Titans, just not, you know what? I mean, it was mediocre, I should say that. But the reason why I really didn't like it was because we saw it in 3D.
Oh, wow.
And I think they just gave us glasses to watch the movie with.
Mm-hmm.
There was maybe like a different gel over the film or something, you know?
Was that one of those films that was kind of done 3D after the fact? Like, they didn't plan on it originally, but... Because I hear
personally,
a lot of...
I don't think they did 3D at all to it. They just said, oh, it's in 3D. That'll be $3 more.
Yeah.
And just shuffled us in there and gave us glasses. But yeah, it was not... I don't believe it was made with 3D in mind.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of the films that do it kind of post-filming just are... Maybe it's improving, but just, yeah, like... I heard, especially Clash of the Titans, but I heard others were just... It was just so bad-looking and so dark and just not... Yeah, just not a fun experience.
Also, Sam Worthington.
I mean, this is like the fifth podcast episode where we've expressed our not fandom of Sam Worthington,
mm-hmm.
but he's still doing a ton of stuff.
What's funny is he made so much money, like hardly even being an Avatar at all. It's not like voice work. I mean, you know, but whatever.
Yeah. Oh man.
Good for him making a living.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Could be worse. It could be Channing Tatum.
I guess, well, before I do, I guess we can mention a couple of things from the Facebook page. You had posted a fantastic, I guess Michael reminded you. Tell us about this trailer. That's incredible.
Collision Course?
Yes. I'd forgotten about it. I've seen that trailer, and I totally forgot about it.
Guys, Night Cheese listeners, this film, Collision Course, which you've not been on the Facebook page, I posted the trailer. It has got to be one of the best bad movies of all time. I know we did that episode about Troll 2 and everything,
mm-hmm.
and that was really funny and bad too, but consider that like the horror version of best bad film. This has got to be one of the best bad, like, buddy cop action films ever. It stars Jay Leno and Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, God rest his soul. And they're, I don't even remember exactly what's going on. Like, I remember something about a rocket gun, and like plans, like these blueprints for this weapon that gets stolen, and he's the cop, and for some reason Mr. Miyagi's there. It's kind of like a Rush Hour type thing, mm-hmm. with Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan, but a lot worse, and not nearly as funny. I mean, it's unintentionally funny. Don't get me wrong, it's completely unintentionally funny. And it's just, oh man, it's bad. It is so bad. And our friend Michael from the Christian Humanist Podcast and I, we've been friends since high school. And we like to routinely, back in the day, some of you younger listeners may not know this, but they had these stores you could go into and take and pay for a movie and keep it for a couple of days, and then you go take it back, called video stores. And you would rent the movie in there instead of having it, you know, at your fingertips, mm-hmm. on your mobile device or on your TV or through your gaming system. And I'm being partially sarcastic, but at the same time, kind of feel like I might need to be serious. I don't know. We would go to a Blockbuster or a Movie Gallery or whatever, wherever it was that was open at the time, and try to look for like a bad movie, just something that we could totally pretend to be like Mystery Science Theater and stuff. And we came upon Collision Course, and oh my gosh, because I was, you know, it's no big secret that I'm a huge Karate Kid fan, to anybody who listens to this podcast. So I saw Mr. Miyagi immediately, and I was like, oh man, this should be good. And I mean bad. and then we saw, and seeing Leno on there on top of it, him playing, you know, the lead role. Oh, dude, Tim, like, I mean, and the cool thing is that you can find it on YouTube, actually. It's broken up into pieces. When I was looking for the trailer, I actually found the film. I just couldn't stomach to actually sit through it, especially by myself. I mean, if you can get around some friends and stuff, like there was an episode of Community or whatever where Troy and Abed and a few other people were watching the Kit Puncher movies and stuff,
yeah.
and, you know, just sitting around for the express purpose of making fun of a bad film. This is a good one to go with, and it's fun in that regard. I mean, standing on its own is just horrible. But and as a matter of fact, one little postscript to Collision Course: Jay Leno, I think, is notorious for bringing celebrities on the Tonight Show, and bringing up some part of their past, like a film or a TV commercial or something from early in their career that they're embarrassed about, and like showing it, you know, to kind of embarrass his guests, you know, just in good jest. I can't remember who it was, but someone counteracted him and brought a clip of Collision Course. And if someone, if memory serves me correctly, Leno did not think it was all that funny, which makes me think it was hilarious. but yeah, so you can find a Collision Course online. If you really want to pay money for it, I'm sure there's a way you can rent it, or, you know, instant, you know, what was it, on demand, you know, anything like that probably. Mm-hmm. But it's really bad, but that's also what makes it funny. The trailer enough, I think, will be enough to satisfy your guilty pleasureness. So yeah, Collision Course, Jay Leno, Pat Morita.
Oh man. That I really do want to see that, but just, yeah, because it looks so awful. And slightly racist, but
to what?
And it looks slightly racist, but
yeah, anyway. Yeah, a bit.
Oh gosh. Oh man. And I also, just for the fun of it, just because I knew it had been a while since we posted, I've brought up this site before. I really enjoy reading the AV Club. It's The Onion's actually somewhat serious site where they review movies, music, film, just kind of pop culture. And this week they released their list of the 50 best films of the 90s. And I won't go through the list. Maybe we can talk about it later, you know. But it was just a neat list to look down and kind of see what all I had, you know, in the past. And there are definitely a few that we've recommended that made the list. That was pretty cool. So that's on the Facebook page too. Check that out. And it was just fun. I love lists like that. I love reading through, whether it be movie lists, music lists, but just things like that. I really enjoyed. So that was a fun read.
Those are always a lot of fun. I always find myself getting like offended though.
Yeah,
that, you know, my pick wasn't ranked high enough or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I did look and saw some of our recommendations, like on page one, you know, mm-hmm. like the bottom third, I guess, mm-hmm. of the bottom third of the list. And I remember thinking, okay, you mean to tell me there's really 40 movies better than this in the decade? But you know, nevertheless, you got to roll with it when it comes to film lists, because they're subjective and people have their own opinions. And I could tell pretty quick into the AV Club list that they were playing with a different deck than I'm used to playing with. Definitely a lot more highbrow stuff than what I'm accustomed to. But that being said, I still want to hold out that both Seven and LA Confident don't got the shaft on their rankings. I think they deserve to be.
Mm-hmm.
I would say at least in the top half.
Yeah.
Even in the AV Club, I would say the top half. Maybe not top 10 for them. I mean, they could be top 10 for me, but again, subjectivity is what it is. So thanks for including them anyways, AV Club. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, I guess we can go on ahead with our recommendations. My film is a movie that Beth and I actually just watched a couple months ago on Netflix, and so it is available through Netflix Instant, which is pretty exciting. And it's a film, and the reason I kind of recommended it at this time, it is a film that is both written and directed by Rian Johnson, and it's actually his first film that he's ever worked on. And I bring it up now because his newest film, Looper, just came out a couple weeks ago and is really great. So this one is his first film, came out in 2006. And it is called Brick.
Brendan?
Emily?
I really screwed up.
Screwed up how?
The brick.
What?
I didn't know it was bad, but the pin's on it now. You gotta help me.
Slow down now. This isn't good.
No.
Emily said words I didn't know. Tell me if they catch. Brick? No. Tug?
Tug might be a drink, like milk and something.
Pin? You know the kingpin.
Crime lord, right?
Big time. What are you gonna do?
She asked for my help. I just want to know she's okay.
So what's first?
I'm gonna start shaking things up.
So you didn't know this boy?
No, sir. Never seen him.
And he just hit you.
But he asked for my lunch money first. Good thing I brown bagged it.
You're coming into a certain situation. It's twisted.
I'm looking for Emily.
He left her.
Yeah, I did.
You better be sure you want to know what you want to know.
Complicated. Everyone's got their thing.
When the upper crust does shady deeds, they've got symbols so they can tell each other that we're getting around.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie? Oh my.
Keep up with me now.
You got a cigarette?
I don't smoke.
I've seen you smoke.
I don't smoke cigarettes.
I thought we had orange juice. I'm sorry.
Water's fine, ma'am. Thanks.
Oh, wait a minute. We have apple juice. It's country style.
So yeah, so again, this film was written and directed by Rian Johnson. And on Rotten Tomatoes, it was given a 79%, and on IMDb, it's 7.5. And I wanted to bring this up, you know, because of Looper just coming out recently. But it's also neat to see a director like this, who's both directed and written films, and the three films, you know, this Looper being his third, Brick being his first, and in the middle, he did The Brothers Bloom, which Brothers Bloom, I think, of all the three, was the least well received, even though it still got. Overall, it got pretty good reviews. I haven't seen it yet, but I would like to. But it was it's just encouraging to see a director like this who has just a very kind of unique style of directing and very unique and very interesting look at script writing as well. This film, Brick in particular, is just it's a really pretty incredible homage to like the noir films of the 40s and 50s, which is a really cool take. Of it all being set in like kind of a high school setting. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he stars as this high schooler named Brendan, who is kind of, you know, one of those kids that like is not, he's kind of an outsider and almost not necessarily by choice, but he just kind of doesn't really fit in with anybody. But, you know, in this movie, in this film, he is willing to kind of make his way through, you know, the complicated sort of ranks of his high school's kind of social sphere, social strata, in order to find out what happened with his ex-girlfriend. He discovers that his ex-girlfriend was murdered. And although they had broken up a little bit before, a few weeks before this had happened, she'd been acting very strange. Like, she had kind of a erratic behavior. She went missing for days. She kind of made a strange phone call before her death. All this stuff kind of causes him to question what happened to her. Something was just not right. And I guess, of course, obviously when someone is murdered, something's not right. But just all these things, just nothing really added up. Nothing made sense. And so he, as an outsider, was willing to go through and investigate. It was become this sort of noir detective and go, you know, nobody, you know, everybody is a potential murderer. You know, nobody's kind of off his list, you know, going through and figuring out what happened. And this film is that journey in finding those responsible for her death. And I'll be honest, it took me when Beth and I first started watching, it took us maybe like 10 or 15 minutes to kind of get the rhythm, figure it out. But once we did get into it, it was just really, really great. Rian Johnson, he did a really, really fantastic job of kind of creating this very rich noir world detective thriller, very deep-rooted mythology, where they even have some of their own language that you kind of have to figure out as the movie progresses, which is, I think, one of the reasons in the beginning we were kind of confused is because it kind of just threw you into this world and didn't really explain a lot, which wasn't a bad thing. I mean, because you do end up figuring things out. It was just a lot of fun to kind of be along for the ride and kind of figure out what people, you know, by the context of the conversations, what they were talking about. Yeah, it was a very original, despite it being an homage, a very original take on a really, really neat genre. It was very, very cool. The dialogue was just very entertaining, very snappy. I have some quotes, but I probably won't give them because it's just strange to read quotes from films. But the quickness and the depth of the dialogue, it really, really makes you kind of have to view it again, which we have not done, but I really want to watch it again just because it's almost a little tough to keep up with, because I mean, things are just moving so quickly. The dialogue is just so fast. It's just really fast paced, but in an exciting way. It's not, it doesn't really suffer, the film doesn't suffer because of it. But this film was a lot of fun, was really, really interesting. And it was neat to hear that they'd made the film. They'd shot with a 35mm, but I think the budget was under $500,000. Like, it was a very, very small budget for a film. And I think also at the same time, they were shooting they didn't have a lot of range as far as where they could shoot. They weren't able to shoot in many different locations, but they still utilized every setting, every scene, to where everything felt really fresh and felt very new. And I this is just kind of a very side thing, and it's a total me thing, because I feel like I bring up Breaking Bad in every conversation. But Rian Johnson, he's also directed a few, and maybe written. I know he's definitely directed a couple episodes of Breaking Bad too, which I thought was pretty cool. And also, I think he directed or wrote for a show that I recommended a while back, Terriers. Sorry, it took me a second to remember. So I just thought that was really cool how he's willing to, because he's been working on, you know, Looper, working on these films for, you know, for just years and years and years, but able to kind of jump out and go and direct a TV show. And it's neat because he kind of goes for the ones that he loves. Like, he doesn't just kind of throw himself out there, but he's very deliberate about what he does. So yeah, so I highly recommend this film. It's a very fresh, very neat take, when I say it's amusing, I don't mean that as in, like, I don't know if it's intentional, but just the seeing these kids, basically these high schoolers, talk the way they did, and just the way the noir homage is set in, it's really funny at times and really clever. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. So definitely check it out. Again, it's on Netflix Instant, and it is a fun film, and it makes me, this film and Looper, it makes me really excited to see what Rian Johnson's going to do in the future. He's definitely one of those directors, writers to watch, so I guess that's it. I highly recommend this film.
Yeah, I was trying to look at the trivia for I've also seen Brick, yeah. And I was really impressed with it at the time. I couldn't agree more about the pacing and the dialogue. I mean, that took a little bit of time getting used to, because it was so fast-paced. Yeah. And I just was not used to that in any of the films I think I'd seen prior to that, you know?
Yeah.
But in trying to find out the budget of the film, which, by the way, was $475. Which is nothing in, you know, Hollywood standards. It was also edited, apparently, according to the New Yorker magazine, was edited on a home computer.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
So, it may not seem a whole lot to any of our listeners who have done any kind of editing above, you know, your Facebook photos or something. Could understand how big of a deal that is. So that was also pretty impressive. I think I've stated before that, you know, film noir is one of my, or at least, you know, if not film noir, crime drama, you know, in the Vegas sense, mm-hmm. it's one of my favorite, film genres. And Levitt, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I mean, he's just,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, what a performer. I mean, like, he's really hard to believe where he came from, you know, as far as, like, Third Rock from the Sun and you know, some of his younger roles. Mm-hmm. Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. And so, yeah, Brick and, like, just, you know, you've seen him now. You know, Christopher Nolan's gotten his hooks into him now. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in Inception and Dark Knight Rises, and of course Looper, you know. Mm-hmm. Say that as
yeah
well. Impressive stuff from that guy, and he also hosted SNL with Mumford and Sons, so you can't really go wrong with that.
Oh, you know, actually I saw that, I can't believe I forgot. Yeah Which he was, man, I tell you what, although I think the episode was great, that his episode, but just I feel like his excitement, you can tell, like, he is so genuinely excited to be there that it kind of just makes it even better.
I couldn't agree more. The episodes of the, not that this meant to turn into SNL or anything, but the episodes of SNL that are the best are always when you can tell they're hosted by people who actually want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, good pick, yeah. Tim. Good pick. Well, my pick this week, I'm going back to the documentary well. Discovered something new this time. And actually, not that he'll ever listen to our podcast, but a singer and songwriter I respect very much, Derek Webb, actually recommended this, I think on Facebook or Twitter or one or the other. And I heard him say this was on Netflix Instant, and I was like, it sounds interesting. If Derek Webb likes it, I'll at least be able to tolerate it. So checked it out, and I was glad that I did. This documentary, it's from this year, actually. It's from 2012, and it's called Indie Game the Movie.
I am determined to make video games, and I make video games because I can.
I mean, it's the sum total of every expressive medium of all times made interactive. Like, how is that not? It's awesome.
My whole career has been me trying to find new ways to communicate with people, because I desperately want to communicate with people, but I don't want the messy interaction of having to make friends and talk to people, because I probably don't like them.
And it's not just a game, like, I'm so closely attached to it. This is my identity. It's Fez. I'm Guy making Fez. You know, that's about it.
You know, making it was about, let me take my deepest flaws and vulnerabilities and put them in the game.
So Indie Game the Movie, it's Rotten Tomatoes given a 92%, and IMDb gives it an 8.0 out of 10. And also won an award at the Sundance Film Festival, you know, for that festival for independent film and everything. And so essentially what this is I know in prior episodes I've referenced video games. I know the King of Kong and the Wizard and stuff. And those films, while the Wizard was just like a family movie that was kind of based on, like, video games were the backdrop. And King of Kong is about mastering the playing of a video game. Indie Game the Movie is on the other side of the camera, so to speak, or the other side of the arcade cabinet, about the developers of games. And that sounds really nerdy and probably like a big turnoff to a lot of you right now. Like, it can't be interesting at all. It's a movie about nerds. Well, it is in some regards, but it's actually very interesting. And just I think it's hard for me to put into words, Tim, but I think anybody, or a lot of people anyways our age, have met, excuse me, would either identify themselves or know someone who identifies themselves as a fan of something indie, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like indie music, or indie films. Yeah, Brick was an indie film, was it not?
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
Yeah, it was edited on a home computer. I would think it was. I don't know, I'm trying to be sarcastic. I mean, I'm pretty sure Brick was an indie film. But you don't really hear much about indie video games.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. It's about indie video games. And for as limited, I do enjoy indie films. Not all of them. But never really been able to put my finger on the pulse as to why. And never been a really huge fan of indie music either. I'm not against it, but indie, and this might tick some people off, and I just want to go ahead and say I don't mean it in a bad way. So please, everybody who's my friend, still be my friend after I say this. I don't mean this in a mean-spirited way. But like a lot of indie music fans, music in particular, indie music fans I've met in my life come across like people who want to vote for Ron Paul. Really level-headed people and have really good ideas, but sometimes are just so severe and so off-putting, you don't want anything to do with what they like.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, please be my friends if you're a Ron Paul supporter. I'm sure we can find something else to be friends about. But a detriment to my personality is I tend to stop looking at the product and start focusing on the person, you know, sometimes, and just how they're, you know, connecting with the art that they're embracing.
Yeah.
And how it makes me not want to because of how they're behaving with it. Mm-hmm. But I say all of that garbage to get to this point. there's an interview segment. They interview several different people. They hone in on three different subjects in this documentary. And one person is just talking about being independent. And he's speaking in the environment of video games, but I really think it broadens itself out to music and to film as well. It's just something about art. Mm-hmm. And this spoke to me, and it really helped me understand independent things and respect it a lot more. Is that he said, you know, when you're creating something like art, you know, he's talking about video games, so he's making comparisons to things like Call of Duty and Halo and these Madden, you know, these massive franchises that the public just consumes every year. And they're like, why don't you make a game like that, man, or whatever? And he's just like, I mean, and he's a little unfair towards those games. He says, well, those games are crap, and I don't want to make crap. You know, I want to make something good. And he just says, you know, to make something, he didn't say to make something independent, but this is where he was coming from. It says, you know, you have jagged edges on it. Well, you're making a piece of art, and it has jagged edges. And these edges are going to cut some people, and, you know, they're not going to be for everybody. So you're, you know, by making something intensely personal, it's going to connect with some people in an intensely personal way, but also it's going to, you know, disconnect with some people in an intensely personal way too.
Yeah.
That is just the nature of doing something that is going to be considered independent, because you're not sacrificing your vision or your ideas or whatever for the sake of a broader audience. And I can respect that, because then I was like, oh, well, there's a lot of indie music I don't like because I just don't connect with it, like any other music out there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some indie films, you know, I don't connect with because, you know, and so in that regard, I was like, well, I can respect him sticking to his art and his vision. It's just not for me.
Yeah.
But it also made me a little skeptical for people who say that, like, indie music is their favorite kind of music. I was like, there's no way you can connect with everything.
Yeah.
You know, I call foul. So anyways, there's that. And so I thought that was really cool, because I actually have played some independent games without really realizing it at the time. They just seem a little off kilter, you know, but for some reason I really enjoy them. And so this documentary, all that being said, follows three different developers and three different stages of life, gaming life, so to speak. And their games. The guy who said that, his name was Jonathan Blow. He had already developed a game, a wildly successful game for independence, anyway, called Braid.
I've heard of that.
And
yeah.
Have you heard of that game?
Yeah, I actually have.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's a commercial and critical success, according to Wikipedia. Yeah. I've heard of it, but I've never played it. But seeing it looked like fun. So he's talking about that on the heels of the success of Braid. And at the same time, there's also a development team referred to as Team Meat, which I will explain that in a minute. Edmund McMillan and Tommy, I'm going to butcher your last name, Refains. They're set out to do a very simplistic independent game that they are calling Super Meat Boy. And I got to say, their portion of the documentary is really, as a kid who grew up playing video games, is really inspiring to watch and fun to jump in and go alongside them with their story, because they're talking about the experiences they had playing games as a kid and how those experiences are gone now because of the development of technology and things that people have gotten accustomed to. And like, and in some regard, I might be putting words in their mouth, but just seeing the way they made the game and stuff and seeing how things turned out at the end of the documentary, I feel like at some point they're like, we want to make a game. You know, games used to be really hard, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I think part of that too is, you know, that the implementation of dying or not dying now in games, or continues or save points, you know, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so anyway, they even went back to, one of the guys went back to his parents' house. Apparently his room was still intact from when he was a kid.
Wow.
And just seeing like these visualizations of his childhood and games that he loved and things, and him pouring himself into this and wanting to make a good game. And so they've made their game, but they're, they've got an agreement with Xbox for their game to go live on the Xbox Live Arcade market. And for those of you who don't know what that means, both PlayStation and Xbox have online stores where you can actually download games where at a discounted price, say maybe $10 or $15, as opposed to $60 you would pay for a Madden game or a Call of Duty game or something like that. You pay a lesser price for a game, and it's a more simplistic game. I mean, you know, it would maybe remind you of, as far as the style and the gameplay, maybe remind you of simpler, like, Nintendo system type games. Sometimes they're not like that. I mean, sometimes they're full out, you know, good stuff, and you just get a good deal for it because the developers, you know, that's what they're wanting to present.
Yeah.
So, so Super Meat Boy is set to release, and the opening scene of the film is one of the guys firing it up his Xbox and finding out that the game is not listed on launch day, and he's fair warning. There's a fair amount of profanity in the documentary, especially at that point when he's panicking. And so the thing is you know, the whole business, you know, side of it is, you know, the longer their game is not available, the less likely they are. So this is more than just a business venture. I mean, you know, developing a game, especially with only two people. Just to put things in perspective. I should mention this. Part of making Super Meat Boy came from a promotion that Xbox Live Arcade made called Game Feast, which is they'd already started on the game. They were about a year into the development, but they said if they could finish the game in a month, they would get, you know, promotion on Xbox, you know. For that. And so anyway, so they deliver the game and stuff, and a lot of the documentary goes into the crunch time right up until launch day. And they're dealing with just the toll that development takes on their lives personally and professionally and stuff like that. And so, anyway, that's a really interesting facet of the story. And then there's one more, this other developer, which I'm trying to find his name right now. Sorry, I'm looking for it. Fish. His last name is Fish. Phil Fish, is developing this game called Fez. And he is an interesting, case study, his situation. Because anybody who followed video games a little too closely, like I have, you'll hear rumors about a game that's coming out and people get a lot of hype and excitement over it. And, only to find out that the game just ends up, for whatever reason, not getting fully developed, doesn't get released or whatever. Wow. And, this game, Fez, he had, began developing. It was first announced in 2008. And he keeps encountering problems after creating all this buzz about his game, and he hits obstacle after obstacle about trying to get it to completion and release. And that side of the documentary explores what people in the video game industry refer to as development hell. And so that's also having heard of that. As a video game fan, that was an interesting thing to explore as well, and just you know, the stress that he underwent as well, professionally and personally, of course. And you know, so it's easy to write off video games as a waste of time, something that isn't to be taken seriously. And in some regards, in the grand scheme of things, maybe it's not. But in this independent sense, you have people who are artists. I mean, these are people you're looking at them. They are struggling for their art and suffering for their art. They're not out there to make this, this huge paycheck, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they do want to be successful, of course, but they also have something they're putting out there. And maybe, I'm certainly not saying that Super Meat Boy rivals Bob Dylan's, you know, greatest work or anything. Not some major social commentary or anything, but it's called Meat Boy, for crying out loud. But anyways, it really is an interesting insight. into these lives and into the lives of just independent business, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And one more thing I was going to say about Meat Boy, I'd said earlier, you know, their development team was only two people. Just to put that in perspective, a game like Grand Theft Auto 4 has a team, a development team of like 1,000 people.
Wow.
And it took, like 4 years for them to come out with that game. So those guys had a development team of 2 and did it, you know, at latest, maybe 1.5 years. Wow. Or so, or 1 year and a month. I mean, you know, based on this article. And so, you know, and granted, Super Meat Boy, graphically speaking, looks nothing like Grand Theft Auto 4, but it's still quite an accomplishment, to finish something like that. And, so anyway, it was, you know, strangely enough, it's funny to even say that there's this emotional fulfillment moment in this documentary like there are with others. But after the game eventually does get released, you know, they're still racking their nerves over how well it's going to go because they were afraid of this delay and stuff with the game not showing up. When one, there were two members of the development team. One guy was married, and I think the other guy was single. The married guy, like, his wife was just really encouraging and supportive of him and stuff. And I think that was enough for him once they finally made it to the finish line, so to speak. But the other guy was just really beat up, and like the other guy was calling him and stuff. And finally, he talks him into going onto YouTube, and there are people posting videos on YouTube of them playing the game and stuff. And people do this all the time with video games and stuff, and like they get really mad and stuff. And all of a sudden you see him just start to like break a little bit, like, and start laughing and cracking up at all these people reacting, you know, to what he's spent so long trying to create and stuff. And in any other circumstances, this wouldn't be very sweet, but like, it's like, this one guy like starts off his video. He's like, "My review of Super Meat Boy, F you." Like, he's just so mad because the game's so hard and he can't beat it. And the guy just starts laughing. So, you know, it's just stuff like that. So it's definitely, if you have the time and want to see what it's like to look into independent video game making as opposed to independent filmmaking, yeah, or independent music, Indie Game the Movie is worth checking out. It's definitely worth your time. It's not very long. I mean, I think it just clocks in just a hair over 1.5 hours, and it's on instant streaming, so it's available there. by all means, check it out. And if you're a video game player, you might get a good recommendation to, you know, for a game you could play sometime. So
nice.
Yeah, I've been poor. I don't have any money, so I've been wanting to check out Super Meat Boy ever since I saw that, though.
Definitely, I want to look into that. That's really exciting. I'm really glad you recommended this, because I definitely agree about, you know, you don't really hear about indie gaming that much. And I feel like gaming in general kind of gets this bad rap, you know, kind of like most forms of media. They kind of look at what the worst, you know, the worst of it all and say that's what it is. And
yeah.
I don't know. I really, you know, honestly, I don't do a lot of gaming now, but I really like games like that. I don't know. I really enjoy that sort of, I don't know. What's not the word I'm looking for, but yeah, I really enjoy stuff like that. So I'm definitely going to check that out. In fact, let me add it to Netflix right now.
And, just as a case in point, as far as independent video games go,
mm-hmm.
There was one game I purchased on the PlayStation. I just bought into the hype, of this indie game a couple of years ago and bought it. And I was so glad that I did. It's a game, and this sounds really silly, but hear me out. This game, downloadable on PlayStation Network, called Flower.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is just a magnificent game. Like, you actually, it's a motion control based game where, at the beginning of a level, you are a single flower petal in a field, and you don't really have villains or anything, or not even much of a story either. But what you do is you go, you're floating on the wind, Mm-hmm. And you're like one of your buttons allows you to gust the wind in a certain direction or so.
Mm-hmm.
And certain elements, certain areas of the level, so to speak, in the first, you notice like the grass is dead and the flowers are dead and stuff. But once you come in contact with them, they come back to life. And you bring like, you just bring life to the landscape and you don't realize this until the levels progress, but you're actually going through valleys and mountains and stuff, making your way to a city, to like this run down, beaten up city. And like, you're restoring life to the city. Anyway, and there's no, you know, there's no dialogue. There's no people in this game. And also one of my favorite things about the game too is, when you come in contact with another object or go faster or slower, the sound effects from coming in contact with other objects, flowers, blades of grass, rocks, mountains, whatever, the sound effects, if you hit them fast enough, actually serve as the soundtrack.
Wow.
So like if you're hitting them in a certain stride, it's like making music, which I've never before or since experienced anything like that in a video game. And that was a moment there where I was like, okay, video games, while they are fun for playing football and shooting people, do not have to solely be about the traditional things. You know, it is not always your princess is in another castle. You know, it is, it can be so much more than that. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, while, and I will say this, the game Stuck in Development Hell, Fez, leans more toward that, leans more toward, lack of a linear story so much as it is an experience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, so you do get to see a little bit of that. There's more of a story to Fez than there was to Flower, but, and so it's, you get a little bit of a taste of that in the documentary as well. So it's really cool.
Very cool. Yeah. I'll check that out. That sounds awesome.
So thanks to, Derek Webb for recommending that. Derek, big fan of your music.
Yeah. Derek, if you're listening, we really, really appreciate.
Still haven't purchased Control yet, but I'm in seminary. I'm poor. I'll get to that as soon as I can.
Yeah. Same here, actually. Well, except for the seminary part, but poor, haven't purchased it. That's all me.
I have all the other ones now.
Yeah. haven't bought it.
Purchased them all too. I just want to make that clear. Legally.
Yeah. Derek Webb's been, not to go off on tangents, he's been doing a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah. Yeah. He had that Soul of Me project, yeah. Which actually I didn't hear that either.
I've heard
Stockholm Syndrome, but that was good.
What's funny, I've downloaded Soul of Me because it's free. I mean, you can actually get it for free like on Amazon, I just haven't, I don't know why I've not listened to it yet, but
yeah,
I definitely will. Been too busy listening to my indie music that you probably never heard of. No big
deal.
Some
obscure number that you've never heard of.
It's funny, nobody brags about it like with games, you know, like, oh, I played this game Flower. You've never heard of it probably. Like, I don't, like, why is that only in, or it's like another thing, like, you know, everybody's, you know, kind of like they don't want bands to get big, to, you know, become mainstream or whatever. But you don't hear that about like anything else. I mean, you want movies. If there's a movie you really like, you want it to be successful. And if there's a
music, Brick got nominated for an Oscar. Such a sellout.
I know. Exactly. Oh, man.
Thank you for joining us, guys, this week for episode 47. Something about Encyclopedia Brown and Carmen Sandiego. I don't know. It's kind of ridiculous, but then again, so are we. Thanks for joining us this week, you guys. Really, seriously, we're glad to be back. Glad you guys are back. And until next time, keep working on your night cheese. I did it all for Tanuki. Come on, Tanuki. Come on, so you can take a looky now at how we get it in. How we get it in. Tim doesn't mind the aging female strippers.